B2. Number 18A.
Is it true?
We are afraid of the next 30 years. The next 30 years we are afraid of overpopulation, of not to have enough food on this earth. We must do something to keep population down and so that we have enough to eat. And on the other side, we all want to demonstrate resurrection, corporeal resurrection. No. I think after 70, 80 years, I've found enough here. I don't see why I should stay here for another 100 years or 1,000 years. So thought, actually, you see, should rise further and say, what I want to do here now is something higher, to demonstrate ideas of life. And I begin to see that really overcoming death is demonstrating here, now, a better sense of life, life's moral. And finally, at this point, I think, oh, no, I don't want people to demonstrate life's moral. I want to demonstrate life capital L. There's only one life. It's actually, can you see that the higher level always includes the lower? But if I have a sense that there is one life, there is one life, well, that solves all the rest down here, solves that I have an individual life. I begin to realize I don't have. There's just one life. And so I don't have a life of my own, and therefore I don't have to overcome death. I jolly well don't have. At that point of the oneness of life, I just see that life, because life is life, demonstrates itself as life, and nothing can stop it. Nothing on earth can stop it. Neither my belief in death can stop it, nor my efforts to demonstrate a better life can stop it. Life demonstrates life. We only would accept the principle of being. We only would accept that life demonstrates life. That's that short, wonderful statement of Mrs. Eddy. Seems so so simple that life does demonstrate what? Itself, life. So why don't we take it? Why are we so much concerned with that jolly old death? You know, as if it were something. See, that isn't something, it's only a belief. Well, why should we be so concerned about something which doesn't exist? We shouldn't. And the trouble is that we get so disappointed sometimes with Christian Science, because we always want to do something which can't be done. We want to knock at death as if it were something. Well, we can't. We can knock as long as we like. Death doesn't yield as something, because it is nothing at all. So knocking at that error doesn't mean anything. Let's demonstrate absolute Christian Science or divine science, and stay in that sense of one life. And then naturally, finally, I go up and say, after all, there is only the I am. I have no personal I am, therefore I have no personal death, I have no personal life to demonstrate. I am. That's the only am there is. All right. Now, this is the way how the idea unfolded through those four levels of science. First Christian Science, absolute Christian Science, divine science, and science itself. Now, we can look at this in various ways, and for instance, see the way we can handle what it handles. Let's look at it from the practical standpoint. What does this handle? We can see that as long as our thought remains on the level of Christian Science, its focal point is really mind, spirit, and soul as the principle of being, and therefore mind, spirit, soul are the solution for the mortal concept, mortal mind, matter, sense testimony. Therefore, this level is engaged in handling physical disharmony. As long as we are in Christian Science, and the orders in Christian Science are here to handle really physical disharmony, so as to really establish physical harmony. You know how in Unity of Truth she speaks about the signs of physical harmony, and that was what she could present in the earlier days. So this is the science of physical harmony. It handles concrete error, sin, sickness, death. Then when we come to absolute Christian Science, where we only demonstrate ideas, here therefore the practice is that it handles spiritual harmony and not physical harmony. What it demonstrates is spiritual harmonies, that it demonstrates ideas. Naturally, by demonstrating ideas, you are not demonstrating illusions. See, that's the great point. When we demonstrate ideas, we are not overcoming illusions. We are not demonstrating illusions. Say, if I'm here in mathematics and I demonstrate that 2 and 2 equal 4, I demonstrate 2 and 2 equal 4, and so I cannot demonstrate something wrong. Therefore, absolute Christian Science handles latent error. If I demonstrate in mathematics that 2 times 2 are 4, I handle the latent error that 2 times 2 could be something else than 4. That I demonstrate. Therefore, I begin to demonstrate here latent error. I begin to demonstrate the noumenon, overcome the noumenon of evil, not the phenomena of evil, the noumenon of evil. Here I begin really to demonstrate my superiority over animal magnetism as such, over the belief that there is something else going on but ideas. When I come to the one life, then my demonstration is even bigger, namely that then I begin to demonstrate that everything which happens is in principle. I begin to demonstrate principle and no more ideas. And the infinitude of ideas, I begin to demonstrate principle. And when I come to the highest sense of science itself, I'm no more going to demonstrate anything because principle demonstrates itself. So, can you see also in regard to the application of these levels to what we call problems or evil or so, each level handles the question of evil from a very different standpoint, has in its view something very different. You know, for instance, that Revelation shows that at the beginning of the Apocalypse, Mrs. Ed shows that angel with the right foot and the left foot. Well, she had the right foot as the dominant power, the left foot over the
elementary latent error,
you see. So, these are two foot. If we can, through the right foot, handle elementary latent error through absolute Christian Science, then actually we can demonstrate also the left foot, demonstration of the outcome of latent error as concrete error like sin and sickness. So even the Apocalypse has already seen those two ways of handling evil. And this is naturally the thing which we should see in our daily practice. Really, we shouldn't always wait until something goes wrong. Here, physical disharmony. so as to demonstrate physical harmony. This is Christian Science. Here is the repair shop, the fix-it shop. See, it's the fix-it shop. Something goes wrong, you go to the fix-it shop, and it will be repaired. I think you had bought the first Ford way back in 1900 or so. What was it, the T2 or so?
Model T.
Yes, all right, let's have. And that Model T runs down again, and we always go to the fix-it shop, and they always fix it. And we would still run around with the Model 1, huh? Model T. Huh. Is that progress? It isn't progress at all. It's only progress if we let the Ford company produce new models, higher models, instead of only fix it and fix it and fix it, to have new production, higher ideas, and to demonstrate higher ideas. Well, this is true in our life. Most Christian scientists only take Christian Science for the level of Christian Science, a fix-it shop. It's so much cheaper to go to a practitioner than to a medical man. It is. I'm more comfortable. You can do it with a telephone call, you see. The other way, you have to go all the way to the doctor and sit there for an hour in the waiting room, and then perhaps come again and again and again. So you can just do it from your bed and just ring up the practitioner and say, well, dear, look here, I have a problem. Could you help me? Could you give me a good thought? And that's where they stay. That's the use of Christian Science. That's why Christian Science goes down. Well, that's not the purpose of Christian Science. We just want to go over and over this in various shades and various ways of doing it, so that in a spiritual way you get the tone of these four levels. See, for instance, you start on the level of Christian Science with the question, what is God? Now, the question, what is God, is answered by mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But for what purpose? The purpose there is to correct our false sense of God. That's why we learn the definition of God, because we do not have a right concept of God. Therefore, here again you can see that this first level is here to say that the definition of God builds up within us a right sense of what constitutes God, and therefore corrects a false sense. So again we have the correction, and therefore on the level of Christian Science we always have the improvement of humanity. Christian Science improves humanity. And you can hear at once that this can't be the end of all, because in being there is no improvement. In being, you don't have a sense, you have to improve something. Therefore, the moment we come to the absolute sense, absolute Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy says, well, in absolute Christian Science, we go out from perfection and the remaining perfection work for perfection. There we have no sense of having to improve the mortal. Can you see? What is true? Is it true that Christian Science improves our life, or is it true that Christian Science shows that we are perfect? Both is true. Both is true. The one is the question of Christian Science, and the other is the question of absolute Christian Science. So we can't say, oh, no, Christian Science, you go out from perfection, remain in perfection, God is perfect, yes. But that's absolute Christian Science. And to think that this is the only answer is wrong. Because it's only one answer out of the four. So, again, I start down here, and in regard, really, to the question, what is God, is really correcting first in our consciousness the wrong sense of God. The moment we have corrected that in our thoughts, so that no illusions make up our consciousness, therefore only ideas. At that point we have touched absolute Christian science, where we are no more concerned to get rid of false concepts, but where we are just thinking in ideas. Can you see? Therefore, here the question is, what are ideas? And so we begin to study, to take these ideas and begin to have a whole calculus of ideas. We always think in terms of ideas. Here we get then the calculus of ideas and see men as the calculus of ideas. The calculus of ideas, which is always calculating right, which doesn't have to correct anything, but which, by calculating right, does not calculate wrong. This is handling latent error. So, in Christian science we handle concrete error, the suggestion of error in its concrete way. In absolute Christian science, through the calculus of idea, we handle the belief that there could be any other calculus. In absolute Christian science, Mrs. Eddy says, man can no more sin. He can no more become sick. He can no more die. It isn't saying, in absolute Christian science, we heal him. He can no more be diseased. Because he is only moving within the rhythm of ideas. And that naturally we can do, even as long as we have a mortal body. We can now have that consciousness of ideas. It's here where she says, well, what is really the difference between spirit and matter? She says, it's only a question of consciousness. If our consciousness is in the rhythm of the calculus of ideas, then we have ideas. If it isn't in the rhythm of the calculus of ideas, we have matter, we have error. So, we start with the question of God in Christian science, correct our false sense of God, that comes to the point where we see all right and only ideas are right, and so we remain in the absolute sense of ideas. As we remain in the absolute sense of ideas, in the calculus of ideas, we suddenly begin to realize, oh, this is still a bit a hard job, always to think in terms of ideas and calculate in terms of ideas. Aren't ideas ideas of the synonymous term? Aren't ideas ideas of God? And so thought goes further and says, yes, they are. The ideas are in God, you see. The all is in all. They are in God. And so I come to principle and idea being one, and I begin to see here at the level of divine science, see, that God is all in all, that I do not have to calculate in ideas endlessly, but I can stay in the consciousness of the oneness of life, the oneness of truth, the oneness of love, which includes all ideas, and therefore includes absolute Christian science, namely the whole calculus of ideas. And so, here in the divine science, I lead idea back to its principle. It's always there where Jesus already said, in him we live and move and have our being. Therefore, we begin to realize that the synonymous term operates for themselves. And so, idea is brought back to principle. And finally, we come to an even higher concept, namely to the infinite one, to the level of science itself, where we begin to realize there is only one, the infinite one. And that includes everything, includes all the categories. You could see, let's see this ascending sense again in a different way. Let's take Jesus. See, Jesus really starts with Christian science. His whole mission at the beginning was Christian science. To heal concrete error. To heal, to resurrect, to provide, and so on. It was all demonstration of physical harmony. That was his healing mission for the 3 years or how long it was. And that seemed to be one of his main missions until he came to the point of absolute Christian Science, where he could see, I have to demonstrate that I am idea. And that is shown as his crucifixion and resurrection. He resurrected himself in spite of the same body, showing that not the body mattered, but that his being is ideas. And so he began to demonstrate absolute Christian Science, and began to demonstrate that though he had a body, he could resurrect himself, he could go through the walls and so on and so on and so on, he could overcome space and everything. He had not now that higher dimension of thought, which he demonstrated and said, I am an idea, in spite of everything, in spite of the body. I am an idea. And then came a point where he could go further and say, I am not just a calculus of ideas. I am in God. And so came the ascension. He went back to his principle. He ascended to its principle and said, I am not just a calculus of idea. I'm the idea of principle, and so he ascended back into God. In him we live, move, and have our being. Now the question is, did he stop at the point of divine science, where he went home to his father, back to his father, where he, so to say, disappeared as an individual idea of the father or of life? And went home to life itself, and we cannot, was that the end? And we see, no, that wasn't the end. Then he only began really to work, because after his ascension, he really showed forth the eternity of the Christ, the point of science of the Infinite One, which said, my being is the Infinite One. The Christ appeared first, and at the Pentecostal days, it appeared again to Paul, it appeared again to John the Revelator, you see, it appeared and appeared, it appeared to Mrs. Eddy as the science of the Christ. And so we begin to see the eternality of the Infinite One, that Jesus was not just a little dust in the universe of infinity, but that he showed only at the beginning this individual manifestation as the healing power, then as the true man, as a calculus of ideas, then going back and showing I am one with my father, and though I go back to my father, but going back to my father doesn't mean that I'm extinguished, but then I find my eternity, my infinitude. And so, as the Christ, I'm always at work. Can you see how thought ascends and ascends and ascends? All right. Let's take another example, just to culture us, with these dimensions, so that we see that they have four different offices, and all offices are necessary. For instance, we have seen, when we went through the textbook, that the textbook gives us the science chapters, so those last four chapters, teaching, recapitulation, Genesis, and Apocalypse. They were, remember, in our matrix, the last column, the column of science. And showing science as the Word, teaching Christian science, science as the Christ, recapitulation, science as Christianity, Genesis, science of science, Apocalypse. Can you remember them? Mm-hmm. Alright, see. That is an expression, a textual expression again, of these four stages. In the chapter on teaching Christian science, she really presents the level of Christian science. And that chapter is full how to handle animal magnetism, how to handle personality, how to handle that which hinders us to be a scientist. It's all about concrete error hindering us to be a Christian scientist, and shows us therefore how through the level of Christian science we become a Christian scientist. And so often in that chapter you say, in order to be a Christian scientist, a Christian scientist, and a Christian scientist, and in no other chapter. Then we come to recapitulation, which shows there the signs after Christ in the textbook, namely Christ science. See, the moment I think when she uses the term Christ science, she means absolute Christian science. You know, the explicit term, absolute Christian science, she only uses a few times in her writings. But naturally, many of the statements about Christian science are in the absolute sense. So you cannot just take all the statements or references from the textbook where she speaks about Christian science and says, this is the level of Christian science. They combine. Some are written in the relative sense, some are written in the absolute sense. That's the spiritual sense in us which must see that. And usually when she speaks in the absolute sense, it's Christ's science. Now, recapitulation gives that science of the Christ. There she begins to go out, deducing from the one principle, and begins to deduce from the one principle how it is expressed through the synonymous term, how it is expressed through the idea, how this does away with the false concept. And so reasons, all about the nominons of evil. She does not give their concrete error and shows how to overcome concrete error, but she gives the system of science as a calculus of ideas of science, and reasons it from the first answer to the last answer, reasons out from principle right down to understanding this principle. So handles there really latent error, the nominon of error, not the phenomenon of error, the nominon of error. Then she comes to Genesis, which has there is in the tone of science as Christianity, and there she gives the sense of the divine science. Genesis is all about that all-inclusiveness. God including all, the all-in-all, and shows that the whole genesis of idea is not going on as an emanation, but as an infinite self-containment, and that this infinite self-containment excludes the possibility of a second record of creation as being true. And so gives the sense of divine science, of the allness, the oneness of being. There is only one creation. There are not two creations. There are only two records of creations, but not two creations. The first record of creation as a creation, and the second record of creation as a creation. What she shows in the chapter Genesis is that there is only one creation, but that there are two records on it. Namely, the first record which shows the true creation, and that true creation shows how impossible it is to have a false sense of creation. That's the second record of creation. The first analyzes and annihilates the possibility of a second false sense of creation, and so shows the oneness of creation. It's like a coin with two sides, but it's the same coin. You can either look at creation in the right way or in the wrong way, but it's the same creation. There are not two acts of creation. There are not two, how shall I say, yes, there are not two different creations, a true creation and a wrong creation. There's only a true record of creation and a false record of creation. But the false record of creation doesn't make a false creation. Just saying the lie about the truth. And this is what she shows. And then, finally, she comes to the last chapter in the textbook, where she added the signs of science. Here we have it, signs of science, science itself, the chapter Apocalypse, in which she shows, really, there, I see a new heaven and a new earth, There was no more sin, there is no more accuser, no plagues anymore in that city, nothing enters that defiles and makes us alive. Oh, everything is harmony. Finished. Full stop. Period. There's just the operation of the divine principle going on. Just the divine principle. That's all that is going on. Can you see how in this way the last four chapters in the textbook give some indication of this ascending thought from Christian Science, how to become a Christian scientist, up to the point where we are no more a Christian scientist, but we just see science itself operating as science.